The Snapping of the American Mind with David Kopelian. That's what it's all about. We'll talk more with him and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Final hour with David Kopelian as we talk about the Snapping of the American Mind. David, how did you get the title?
I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, and he, I was working on the book. I do a book like every 5 years.
Right.
Marketing of Evil was 2005. I was on with you in 2010 with How Evil Works.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been in progress for years. But a couple of years ago, I'm listening to Rush, and he's talking about Obama, and he's just typical Rush. He's saying, it's like he wants everybody to snap. He's just challenging the sanity of the country.
There it was.
You know, that's what it is. And we often grab good things and we make it into from talk radio and we make it into a story. And I listened to the clip. It says, yeah, and that just kind of grew on me. And there is a very famous book, goes back 1978, called The Closing of the American Mind by Alan Bloom. It was a number one New York Times bestseller. And it's a very iconic, famous book, The Closing of the American Mind. And the first paragraph of that basically says that this whole business, he's a college professor, he says, the whole business of believing that everything is relative, there is no truth, there is no reality. I believe 2 + 2 = 4. You believe 2 + 2 = 17, but they're both just as good as each other. He said, this is what is in, you know, this is a problem now. So now, I kind of wanted a generation later to show when we don't have any sound values that are actually rooted in reality and history and logic and understanding human nature and understanding the sacredness of human life, then we end up in a crazy place. So this is, you could say, like the next generation. 30 years after the closing of the American mind, you have the snapping of the American mind.
How do we unsnap? How do we do
well,
that?
You know, George, when you do a book, a nonfiction book like this, the whole book is full of problems. Okay, the book is explaining and exploring a problem. You have to give your solutions at the end. And the whole last section of the book, last several chapters, go into the solutions. And I basically have it in three levels, okay? One is the macro level of, you know, our country. And I give a laundry list of things that I explain that we need to do, starting with electing a president who actually loves this country and her constitution and, you know, as commander-in-chief would be respected and loved by friends and feared by enemies, really basic stuff. Secure the nation's borders, reduce the size of the government to reasonably constitutional levels. I put abolish the IRS in there, you'll be glad to know. I also said abolish the Federal Reserve, which is actually not constitutional because the people gave Congress the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof and didn't say they could give it to an outside banking cartel. So, a lot of macro things in there. The military needs to be strong, support Israel, abandon political correctness. I go through a whole lot of things in there. Now, you can argue, yeah, well, that's great, David, but how are we going to make those things happen? Okay, point taken. So while we're waiting, that has to do with leadership, okay? Until we get the kind of leadership and a change in the culture and really a revival in the country, not too many of those things will happen. So then I go to the individual level. And the individual, you know, and by the way, one of the key things is stop depending on the government for anything, okay? And I talk about things like basic civic things like voting, but protecting your children from the kind of, I have a friend who says the culture is a child molester, is how he describes it, the talk show host. I talk about prepping. Prepping is a good thing. You're not a nutcase to prep, to prepare for the worst and live for the best. I talk about exercising Second Amendment rights. I talk about having faith in God. I talk about some other edgy things, de facto secession. I don't think we're ever going to have real secession. We fought the Civil War over that. The anti-secessionists won. But I think that, like the Mormons all moved out to Utah, and they had a better life. than they did where they were. They were getting persecuted. They didn't have to secede from the Union, but you know, so you can move to a state. If you're a conservative, you can move to Texas. If you're a liberal, you can move, you know, any big city, basically. You know, there is that way of moving to where you're more comfortable. I talk about civil disobedience. I run through a whole list of things that where we do have control and leverage. But even beyond that, George, if we're so stressed out, our minds are snapping, and we're one of those 130 million people that has to take legal or illegal drugs or get drunk in order to get through life, you know, we're not doing much good for anybody, for our country, for our family.
Or themselves. So
or ourselves. And then I get into the personal slash almost spiritual things, but I mean diet. Hint. Disregard everything the government has ever said about food, and there's remarkable things. The things they said about eggs for the last 40 years, about milk for the last 40 years. They just this last year said, "Oops, we were wrong. We scared the crap out of everybody for 40 years about eating eggs, but you know what? They're actually good for you, and they don't raise your cholesterol and all this." So you have to do a little research. What you eat is important. There's really good stuff. I give lots of references in the book and the end notes and all that, where to look. Exercise, incredible stress relief. Almost any kind of exercise you do is remarkably helpful for exercise. Every doctor, every clinic, every hospital, every stress expert says exercise. I talk about rest. I discuss meditation. I discuss rising above anger and hatred. I go through a whole lot of things that are sort of personal discipline type things where even if the rest of the country, God forbid, is going to hell in a handbasket, you, your family, can live a sane and happy life in the midst of chaos. So I go through all those levels of it, and I try to give some ideas that will be helpful to people in all of that.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Bob in Oklahoma City. Welcome to the program, Bob. You're on the air with us.
Thank you. As your guest, or sir, what is your name again?
His name is David Kupelian.
Okay. Have you ever read the Communist Manifesto that was written in 1935?
The Communist Manifesto written in 1935?
Yes.
Not the one by Marx and Engels.
Yes. Uh-huh. It talks about how they were going to use mental health in this country to destroy it from within.
Okay, what's your question there, Bob?
Well, that is my question.
Okay.
You've answered it. You have read that.
Well, that's the concern that I was expressing. There's been a lot written about that based on the very real world circumstance of the Soviet Union using mental health as a weapon, psychiatry as a weapon. And, you know, when I was little, I used to wonder, why did they put the good guys into psychiatric lockup? Why didn't they just put them in prison if they're so evil? I didn't realize then. I was young and less understanding about the ways of the world. They had to keep up their image as being the, you know, they thought, you know, they believe Marxism is scientific. They thought, and many in the West, in America, in the 20s and 30s and 40s, thought that the Soviet Union was the most enlightened place on Earth. And so they can't say, yes, we are so enlightened, everybody's equal, but by the way, anybody who disagrees with us, we throw them in prison. No, they had to say, well, these people need help. They have sluggish schizophrenia or whatever it is, and so we're helping them. So it was to kind of keep their self-image and their image of their vast population. It was a place that spans 10 time zones. They had to keep them all mesmerized into the, you know, the communist true believers. So that is part of the reason why they use mental health and not just the sheer brutality of their gulag system.
It's also a good way to have someone go crazy themselves, putting them into one of those kinds of institutions.
Yes, it will really test you. It's not a good place to be.
Michael in Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Thank you. David, You talked about the Ten Commandments. I think of Roy Bean. He just wanted Judge Roy Bean. He just wanted to have them posted on government property, and he got in a lot of trouble about that. But you don't go to church, and I find that the churches are preaching this covetousness, you know, that we need to give all of the Protestant wealth of this country to the anti-Protestant illegal aliens that are coming in by the millions. Even the Protestant pastors preach this covetous doctrine. Do you have in your book a suggestion as to how to turn that around?
Now, let me see how I understand. You're talking about clergy that are getting behind the whole issue of bringing illegal aliens and settling them in this country and taking them sort of under the wing in the church. Is that what you're talking about?
In every way possible, they are behind doing it. And I'm saying that it's Protestants. This is a Protestant-majority country. It was founded exclusively by Protestants. And now we are being told that it is a good thing to allow Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders to rob us of our wealth and give it to the anti-Protestants coming from Mexico, the rest of Central America, and South America. Do you have a suggestion as to how to turn sanity back to the Protestant majority in this country?
Yeah, I don't believe it is a majority of Protestants that are in favor of this. We have, on WorldNet Daily, we have written about this and exposed this. This basically within the organized religion. I think there are Catholics also that are involved in this, but basically it is clergy that are reading the Bible in such a way. By the way, the left has co-opted everything, including the Bible. They find a way to, in fact, liberation theology, which is basically Marxism disguised as Christianity. They have a way of making their own version of Christianity. And I think under that umbrella, they say, well, you know, they'll find the scriptures that say that we need to welcome the stranger and so forth. And therefore, we need to bring illegal aliens into this country and we need to support them. And yes, they should not be allowed to do that. Look, we do have a law. The whole idea, I know it's not politically correct to say illegal aliens, okay? I have a whole chapter in my book about how the language has changed and all these words have their meanings changed to where we don't even know what we're talking about anymore. But they were called illegal because they were illegal, because they broke the law.
I know. Illegal. What would be so difficult to understand that, David? They broke the law.
Well, the people have their reasons. The statistically, the vast majority, 70% plus of aliens, legal or illegal, that come into this country tend to side with big government solutions and vote Democrat. So there's a very clear reason why the holy grail for the far left is to have a permanent progressive voting majority so you never have another Republican president or Congress again. That is their stated ultimate goal here. And so they have found, this is the point Ann Coulter made in her recent book, is that they couldn't really convince Americans of it, so they're importing voters by the thousands and tens of thousands into this country because they tend to want to vote Democrat.
Ballot box stuffing the interesting way, isn't it?
Any way they can, yes.
But you still think this is fixable?
It's very difficult. I don't give up hope. I mean, you could say, no, if there's no hope, then what do? You go off, you drop out, you live for yourself or your family, and you try to live a good life. No, too many people have fought and bled and died to help this country and to help strangers in foreign lands. There's still half the country
that is not, has not had their mind snapped. I mean, we're a divided country. So we had the, even the last elections, it's still, you know, within a few percentage points, the election. We don't have these giant landslide elections. It's a real civil war we have, a non-shooting civil war. And so I think that, yes, there is hope, but people need to wake up. Individually, they need to find their humanity and stop being so brainwashed and intimidated by political correctness. You know, if we had proper leadership in this country at the top and also in the churches, it's a long road back. There's no question about it. But yes, it is possible, because the alternative to having hope is hopelessness, and I'm not going to go there.
Let's go to Brian in Hartford, Connecticut now. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Yeah, you talked about religion and Christianity only going back to the 1200s. Europe throughout the 1500s, 1600s, they were killing each other, torturing each other. Protestant, you know, up to World War II, Jim Crow laws, which had a thing in the religion. We were slaving people in the name of religion. I mean, we had all that. You said that, you know, obviously the only people that haven't snapped are the ones that are on the right. You said we're a central right country, yet why are the Republicans only giving this far right picture of it? And then the second thing is with Bernie Sanders is it's not about, you know, greed or envy. It's about having too much and too few. You look throughout history from France to, you know, Batista, you know, all of Central America, all those countries fell because too few had too much power. You know, the Bolshevik Revolution, it's not about having too much. It's about having a reasonable distribution. And the Bible that you claim to have, the New Testament, talks about distribution, talks about, it's basically socialist. And even the Old Testament talks about redistributing the land every 50 years. So I don't buy all your arguments.
Oh, that's fine. And there's no question that there's been the reason I mention that I don't go to church, that sounds like a gratuitous comment. I mean, I have gone to church. I don't go regularly. But I am not a huge fan of the institutional church as it
well,
is.
Well, I'm like
today.
You, David. I'm a believer in a higher power, but I don't need to have some kind of organized religion telling me what to do.
Yeah, I think the Bible is like Donald Trump says, it's the best book. It's even better than Art of the Deal. but it's something to be contemplated thoughtfully by individuals. I don't need somebody to tell me what it means. Look, he's talking about the 15th century. I remember as a kid, the Protestants versus the Catholics in Northern Ireland. And I was always like, well, gee, Dad, you know, they're both like Christians. Why are they killing each other?
David, hold on. We're going to come back, wrap things up, and take final calls next. Well, our annual Ghost to Ghost show will be Friday, October 30th, so circle that on your calendar. And if you've got some ghost stories and you want to try to get them on the air here, just send it. A little brief description of that story to ghoststory@coasttocoastam.com. ghoststory@coasttocoastam.com. Make sure and include your day and evening phone numbers. And you know what? That story just might make Ghost to Ghost on Friday, October 30th. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with David Capellian, his work, The Snapping of the American Mind. And David, I don't want to leave people with the idea that there's no hope. So why don't you give us a little?
You know what? The last chapter of the book is the most hopeful. And basically, it's my personal exploration of why we're here. And you know, I set the stage by talking about the going on the to the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. when I was a kid, and this famous video called The Powers of 10. You can watch it on YouTube. It's 9 minutes long. And it's every 10 seconds you go farther and farther away from the Earth, and it takes you all the way out to 100,000 light years away from Earth. And then it takes you back to Earth in this sort of roller coaster ride. And then it takes you inwardly into the
a man's hand down to the nucleus of a carbon atom. And it shows you all these different powers of 10 and all the different, the relative size of all things. And then I come back to it, I say, so here we are, human beings with all of our huge flaws, okay, and we are put right in the middle of this. Now, I am unable to believe that there is not a creator of all this. You just look at the natural universe, okay, whether it's the orbiting things out there in outer space or the inner orbits, and you've got electrons. What keeps the electrons going? Why don't they run out of energy? There's some amazing architectural system here that's beyond, a blade of grass is more complex down at the atomic level than the most amazing supercomputer that man has ever made. So it's a real stretch for me to believe that there is no creator of all this. And if there is a creator, and he has such an amazing purpose for all this fiery clockwork, out there in outer space and inner space, and here we are right in the middle of it, it's this magnificent privilege to be a human being and to wonder. And you don't have to take it from a minister or an expert, secular or sacred of any sort. We are here for a journey. We got the outward journey where we got to work and make a living and keep body and soul together. But there's an inner journey toward God, toward meaning, toward our Creator, whatever you want to call it. And it's an individual journey. We each are meant to take it. And I sort of give the guidepost of how I see that journey in the last chapter. I commend it to people. I think it's hopefully inspired and will inspire people. But this is ultimately putting aside who gets elected president and what kind of healthcare system we have and all the rest of it. This is an individual journey, and we're meant to find truth, reality, whatever that is, and that's an individual journey. And I will just say that God is real and God is good. But He, as the Bible says, He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. And that's as much as I will quote the Bible here, but that's got to be true, because it seems very elusive, but there's something about if we really are committed with all our heart to finding whatever truth is, it stands to reason that we're going to find it.
Okay, let's go now to the final calls. We've got Joe in Los Angeles. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Yeah, I think there's, not only with what's going on in the world, but in the U.S. and everything, I think there are supernatural forces at work, I would say demonic, basically fallen angels. I think they're, in facets of society controlling people in powerful positions. But not only that, individuals, like-minded just individuals themselves that are not even in powerful positions, but they can influence human beings in ways just like a good angel can, a demonic angel can influence people. So I think these forces are controlling many things in the world, and this is a lot of the chaos going on, a lot of the murder, but also a lot of the destabilization of the world and a lot of the dysfunctional governments and everything else. That's just what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Yeah, let me comment. So, yes, good and evil are very real. Back in biblical days, they used to say, well, he has a demon or he has a devil in him. Jesus would cast the devils out of people. Today, we have a secular society, and so we give the same troubled people, now we give them psychiatric diagnoses, a psychotic delusion, or he's a schizophrenic. And we have a name, a long Latin-sounding name, for people that go in and shoot a classroom full of innocent kids, okay, because they're really angry and pissed off and they want to go out with a bang. So, in one age, it's called one thing. In our age, it's called something else. I'm pretty sure it's the same thing. And what your caller, Joe, was saying, called demons. Yes, that has to be true, because these people, the worst people that do, like this, I live very near to where this Roseburg shooting was recently, okay? That person who shot all those people,
He wasn't born that way. He was born innocent, okay?
Something
got into him during his life. You want to call it a demon? That's good.
And I guarantee he was on pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, well, I've written a lot about this. There was a whole chapter in my previous book, How Evil Works, about this, where there is a real one-to-one correlation. If you go back, all the most famous cases, the worst cases, where it names what drugs they were on. But you know what? It's hard to find that information anymore. After the Virginia Tech shooting, which was the biggest, the largest number of people killed, okay, I read the entire 150-page report that the state of Virginia put out about that as a postmortem. It had everything imaginable about this guy, but it would not tell you about what psych meds he was on. And a lot of people think, well, the drug manufacturers don't want lawsuits, and they're paying somebody off. I don't know, but it's very hard to find out what medications people are on these days when they commit these heinous acts. And you know what? They're dead, okay? There's no legal case to have to give them a fair trial. We should be able to find out what drugs they were on and draw the conclusions, because I'll tell you, after Andrea Yates drowned her 5 children in the bathtub, remember that one?
Oh, that was a horrible story.
She was on Effexor, which is a SNRI antidepressant. You know what? The manufacturer quietly slipped in a rare adverse event called homicidal ideation, meaning murderous thoughts, into the effects of that drug. And that's a very commonly used antidepressant in America today. So yeah, these drugs, since we brought it up, are way over prescribed.
Yep.
It's something like 11% of every person 12 and over in America is currently taking them right now, according to the Centers for Disease Control. And they have really fearsome side effects, and everyone comes with a black box warning on them. That's the most stringent, dire warning the FDA has for suicidality. So I don't understand how we take somebody who is depressed and give them a drug that makes them want to kill themselves. That seems counterintuitive to me.
And it's happening all over the place, David. All over the place.
It's growing. The numbers, and I'll tell you one statistic. In 2010, there were 260 million prescriptions for antidepressants in the United States of America. There's only 325 million people. 260 million people. All these statistics are from the CDC. So we are way over prescribing, over medicating people. And I tell you, that is part of this whole snapping process, because we don't really understand these drugs. We are arrogant. We're in a kind of a secular age where we have this mad scientist mentality, and we don't really understand what makes people tick. We can make a lot of money, and we can cover up the symptoms and get the next patient in there 10 minutes, turn around a patient just like that, give them a prescription. You don't have to do the hard work of actually getting to what's wrong with them and helping them to understand themselves and forgive the people that have wronged them, and to face some difficult things and find some real healing.
Okay, next up we have Gary in Tampa, Florida. Gary, good morning, and thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
Good morning, David. George, I wanted to tell you real quick, or ask you to please do not run for president. You are exactly where you need to be to do the most good for our country. You are an absolute national treasure.
Thank
at
you.
Coast to coast. And you can do the most good right where you're at.
Right where I am.
David, I wanted to point out a couple of things. You seemed early on to be concerning me, but then several things you said recently have started to warm my heart, especially about the Federal Reserve. I wanted to mention two things, and then I'll get up there and listen to your response. First, talking about the IRS and that you were sympathetic to some of George's positions on the IRS. Listen, it says in the body of the Constitution, the government shall not tax the fruits of one's labor. I forget the amendment number that created it, but that is an unconstitutional amendment. It also says in the Constitution that it can be amended, the document can be amended by state legislatures ratifying within 24 months an amendment passed by Congress. Well, two states did not ratify that amendment in 24 months. One of them was like 2 weeks late, and one of them was a month late. And they said, that's close enough, go ahead and do it. Look it up. One was 2 weeks late or so, and one was about a month late. That means that the amendment is unconstitutional. You can take any issue in America and just put it to a simple litmus test. Is it constitutional or is it unconstitutional? And if people want to continue to try to do something that is unconstitutional, then they are a domestic enemy, also mentioned in the Constitution and mentioned in every oath that is taken by every elected official and most law enforcement officers, where they swear that they will protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And anyone who is against the Constitution is a domestic enemy. And there's your litmus test. Relative to drugs, which you also said that you were sympathetic to George's position, listen, we have a unalienable right, meaning it cannot be taken away, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Liberty means free will. If you look up a dictionary, free will. If I have free will, then I should be able to put anything in my body that I want to. Or at the opposite of that is the government should be able to tell me I have to put something in my body. You're talking about these psychotropic drugs. Some people are being told you have to take this. Well, that's the absolute value of saying that I can't take something. Both of them are unconstitutional. It's as simple as that. And I love your position on the Federal Reserve. It also is unconstitutional. I'll get off there and listen to your responses. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Go ahead, David. And the time
Thank
we have
you.
Left.
Well, you know, Gary, I think you're talking about the 16th Amendment, that it didn't pass. You know, there's been a lot of research done on this, that it didn't really pass within the proper time, and that various states had different versions of the wording, and so therefore that's a technical violation. The problem that is that what they found is that other amendments to the Constitution were the same thing. They weren't really passed properly. They had different wordings. And so if you're going to take out the 16th Amendment, they say, well, you're going to have to get rid of these other amendments to the Constitution too. And I don't think the will is not there. This is going back, you know, more than 100 years now to 1913. I'd be happy to throw out, that was a bad year for America. We had the IRS, we had the 16th Amendment and the Federal Reserve came in during that progressive administration of Woodrow Wilson. They should both be thrown out. They're both inconsistent with the Constitution. I totally agree. The Constitution is paramount. These jokers take a solemn oath before God and man to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and they don't mean it, and that's really a travesty.
We have time for Joe in the Bronx, maybe one more after that. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to ask your guest, what impact, negative or positive, does he think the sexual revolution of the 60s has had on marriage in its current state?
Bad, very bad. Look, the sexual revolution was a gift from the left, the cultural left. It has unquestionably given us, you know, family breakdown, divorce, fatherlessness, along with some of the, you know, the welfare state, some of the other policies. But, you know, tens of millions of people in America are addicted to porn. I mentioned earlier, we have 110 million Americans have STDs. That's an astonishing number. There's only 300 and some million people, 110 million with sexually transmitted diseases. Fatherlessness is the number one indicator for everything bad with children, for poverty, for going to prison, for joining gangs, for having sex early, for having children out of wedlock, for depression, mental illness. It's a really sad thing. And that also gave us legalized abortion, because if you're going to have free sex, then you're going to have abortion. There's recent peer-reviewed research, I'm talking research that dealt with close to a million women, major research that shows that women who have had abortions, and I'm not attacking them, as one in three women in America have an abortion by the age of 45. These are our sisters. This is a trauma. But the fact is, they're twice as likely to later become mentally ill as non-abortive women. So there are many ways in which the sexual revolution has been, it's let a genie out of a bottle that, you know, this goes back to our traditional Judeo-Christian values that we denigrate now, but basically it was that sex is sacred and is meant for marriage, and if we were to observe that, a whole lot of problems would cease to exist.
All right, let's go now to George in San Antonio, Texas. Go ahead, George, get you in real fast.
Yeah, it will be. Thank you for letting me on. This is so pertinent a subject. I am so glad it's on. It's going to be affecting you right now and the days to come. But I'm seeing this coming in the future is that we have the black movement of Black Matters. It's just, to me, it's racist anger on whites. And the police are going to be shot at. And they're going to be not backed up by their city governments. Obama is going to still push to take the guns away so the citizenry is unarmed. And then more and more police are going to quit or not even join. So we're going to have no police department.
They're having trouble in St. Louis getting enough police officers. David, we are out of time. I'm sorry, folks. You're still on hold. Hundreds of people continuing to call. I can't get to you. David, you take care. Tell Joe Farah hi for me, all right?
I will. Thanks, George.
And on our next program, by the way, we're going to be talking a little bit with Charles R. Smith for a couple hours about cyber warfare and just what is going on in that arena. So make sure that you're part of our program. Great shows for you all week long. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.